Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, high-quality audio goes mainstream. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Andy.
As ever, we're going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when... insert country here. Won Eurovision! Maybe I should just, as we're recording this before the final, so we don't know who won, but maybe I should just go through and say some of the favourites, and then I'll cut it in later. So, a week when Iceland won Eurovision, Malta won Eurovision, Lithuania won Eurovision, Bulgaria won Eurovision.
So you're not doing the UK?
I don't think there's any need for that. Anyone else?
San Marino! No.
San Marino won Eurovision. It's actually possible.
Explain why that's possible.
One, it's the first time they've ever entered a good song. And two, Flo Rida's on it for some reason.
If that does work, then next year, everybody will be booking American rappers to do a verse of their Eurovision songs to get the extra votes in.
Well, they got a bit of tension in as well because it wasn't clear if he was actually going to make it over to Rotterdam from the US to do the very important job of rapping a verse on San Marino's Eurovision entry. Apparently, he was always planning to come and do it, but he didn't make the first rehearsals because he was in Miami judging a bikini competition. So,
so it wasn't COVID regulations that delayed his arrival.
No, not at all. No, it was an important bikini competition, a COVID-safe bikini competition.
Well, COVID regulations be damned. If there are bikini competitions to be judged and verses to be delivered as part of songs being performed by European countries that most people forget or even countries, then forget the COVID regulations, get to that bikini competition, get to Rotterdam. Well done to him. And maybe by the time this podcast goes out, a Eurovision winner.
Maybe. That would be fun, wouldn't it? My plans to cut in whoever the winner was. Well, then we'd have to discuss all the songs. We haven't got time for that. Let's just say we're recording this before Eurovision, but it's all very exciting. I assume everyone else listening is as big a Eurovision fan as I am.
If you're a CMU Daily subscriber, you may have noticed that we've had a Eurovision report pretty much every day this week. The compromise is they have to go in the and finally section, even though that's kind of us saying we're reporting on this really important song contest, but it's actually a bit of and finally light relief because no one takes it seriously, is kind of what we're implying by our positioning of the stories. Most of which
should be in the top story slot every day of the year.
Well, most of those stories related to people having to drop out because they diagnosed COVID. So,
yeah.
in a way, not really and finally material. But nevertheless, Eurovision happened by the time you hear this, but it hasn't happened by the time we record this. So maybe we shouldn't be dwelling on it at all, really. And we should be getting
on. We shouldn't have mentioned it.
With whatever it is that we're actually here to talk about this week.
Yes, later on we will be discussing the UK Competition Regulator's investigation into Sony Music's acquisition of Cobalt's AWOL division. But first, last week, both Apple and Amazon announced that users of their streaming services would now get access to high-quality audio without having to pay any extra for it.
Yeah, so basically what happened last week is that higher-quality audio streaming, which until last week we considered to be a premium product for which we could charge a premium price, is no longer premium. Everybody should have access to higher quality audio when they're streaming their tunes. I am sure that Neil Young would approve. He's a big fan of higher quality audio, is he not?
Yeah, famously so. I mean, he had his own high quality download service at one point, didn't he? I think he even said he was going to launch a streaming service. But,
no need.
Did that ever happen?
No, I don't think.
Well, there's no need now, no.
No.
Which is good because I don't think he ever did.
So, yeah, announcements from both Apple and Amazon relating higher quality audio this week. So from an Apple perspective, the fact that higher quality audio will be available is news in itself. The fact it's not going to be charged at a premium is also news, but Apple has not previously made higher quality audio available via its music service. But last week it made two announcements as far as high quality audio is concerned. First, that it will start making the entire Apple Music catalog available in lossless audio starting from next month. I think it will be rolling it out. Not all tracks will be available in lossless audio from next month, but by the end of the year, basically the whole catalog will be. It also announced that thousands of tracks will become available in spatial audio utilizing Dolby's Atmos technology. Andy Malt, with his music production... What qualification did you get in music production? Was it an...
I've got an AS level in music technology.
With his AS level in music technology, we'll now explain to you what spatial audio and Dolby's Atmos technology is all about.
Spatial audio kind of sounds like it's all around you, and Dolby Atmos technology is the thing that Dolby's selling at the moment that most people cannot use.
Spatial audio, said Apple last week, gives artists the opportunity to create immersive, yeah, we love that word, don't we? Immersive audio experiences for their fans with true multidimensional sound and clarity. It's the biggest advancement ever in sound quality, said Apple Music's VP of its streaming service last week. I mean, it isn't, because they're not the first platform to be utilising...
He did say it was Apple Music's biggest advancement. I don't think he said it was the biggest advancement in the history of music.
I will read you the quote. Apple Music is making... Oh, its biggest advancement ever in sound.
Yeah,
oh,
you
okay.
See.
I misread the quote. Okay, I apologise to the VP of Apple Music. I misread your quote. You are correct that it is Apple Music's biggest ever advancement in audio quality, mainly because you've never had any advancements in audio quality previously. So it's the first one. So it's got to be
the
biggest.
Well, there was that time they made iTunes 256 kilobits, and that was a major advancement at the time, wasn't it?
Because actually going from whatever it was prior to that, it's quite a big difference, isn't it? Do you remember that? The early MP3s, which were what, 126? Is that what they were?
I think the early MP3s were... No, they were 128, but I think before that, you get sometimes you'd buy like 96, which is basically this, like listening to music through a wall.
Yeah, 128, that's right, isn't it? Anyway, Apple were very excited about all of this and were bragging about how there will be tracks available through their service very soon in this spatial audio from the likes of J Balvin, Maroon 5, because we all want that, The Weeknd, Ariana Grande, and so many more. But we should remind ourselves that the most important line in this statement that came out from Apple last week regarding all of this higher audio quality nonsense was the fact that all of this will be available to Apple Music subscribers at no extra cost.
Yeah, because up until now, high quality audio has been seen as a premium product and therefore a way to get more money out of subscribers. Because ever since Tidal predecessor Wimp first started doing that high quality audio thing, there's basically been the logic that premium audio should come at a premium price. And usually that's double the price of a normal subscription. So, you know, £20 a month instead of £10 a month. And various streaming services have started doing this. So obviously Tidal, which grew out of Wimp, sells a higher quality streaming tier. Deezer has its higher quality streaming service. And then in 2019, Amazon launched its own higher quality streaming tier, although the difference there was that it had dropped the price of the premium tier. So it was charging £15, not £20. So there was already an attempt there to bring down the premium price, although Amazon has done a lot more playing with pricing tiers perhaps than other streaming services anyway. But now Apple's come and blown it all out of the water by offering this at no extra cost. And Amazon has already followed suit and decided it's no longer going to charge a premium fee for its premium audio.
Yeah, pretty much as soon as Apple confirmed, I mean, we kind of knew it was coming, but as soon as Apple confirmed that it was going higher quality audio and it would be available to everybody, all of their existing subscribers at no extra cost, Amazon put out its own statement saying that although with its HD services, it had been charging a premium previously, albeit a lower premium than what had been standard prior to it launching that service in 2019, from this point onwards, all Amazon Music Unlimited subscribers, including people on family plans or the Amazon Prime members who get a discount on their Amazon Music Unlimited subscriptions. All of those people will now be getting the HD service, the higher quality audio, at no extra cost.
So Vice President of Amazon Music, Steve Boom, said in a statement, "When we first launched Amazon Music HD, our goal was to lead the industry by enabling music fans around the world to stream the best quality recording the way the artists intended their music to be heard. We're thrilled now to make Amazon Music HD available to everyone at no extra cost. All music fans should have access to this quality of music, and now they do."
So, what has been the response of the music community to this development? Because, remember, streaming is a revenue share business. So basically, the streaming services commit to share up to 70% of their monthly revenue with the music industry, labels and artists, songwriters and publishers. So obviously, where you're charging a premium for higher quality audio, whether that's double the price as was originally standard or the £5 premium that Amazon was charging, well, higher price, more money goes into the pot. Because the money in the pot is then shared out across the music industry, it means more money for everybody. So there were plenty of people in the music industry who quite liked the idea of us pushing higher quality audio, particularly as people got ever better devices for listening to digital music, so that we can get more money out of those subscribers, so that there is more money to share out across the industry. So some people have expressed concern that this idea that we'd had for a number of years now, which is that one way that we could grow the digital pie was by offering ever more higher quality audio and charging the premium for it. Now, because of the decisions that Apple and Amazon have made, that is no longer possible. And then I saw some cynics, but wise cynics, in the social feeds this week, observing that, of course, both Apple and Amazon are in the device business. So in a way, if they're providing music at a higher quality audio, they can probably charge higher priced devices to people in order to listen to this higher quality audio music and get the benefit of the higher quality audio. So the Amazons and Apples of this world can make more money out of higher quality audio by selling more expensive devices. And yet, because of what's happened this week, the music industry isn't going to benefit when more people start listening in to this high quality audio.
Yeah, well, you say that, but there was someone, I think it was The Verge, actually went and asked Apple some questions about this on the topic of their headphone products, because obviously Apple sells its AirPod wireless earbuds and recently launched some very expensive over-ear headphones. And responding to them, Apple admitted that none of their headphone products can play the high quality audio that they're now giving away for nothing. So I think it was the kind of the smaller AirPods, those just simply cannot play high quality audio, whereas the AirPod Max headphones can play high quality audio, but because they're Bluetooth, the way they transfer the audio means that it's kind of converted again from the device. And as a result, although it'd be close to high quality, it isn't actually lossless.
So is that you giving Apple and Amazon the benefit of the doubt here? This isn't a devious way to deprive the music industry of a sneaky way to get more money out of subscribers so that they can sell more higher price, higher audio quality devices to those music fans?
No, I'm not saying that at all. No, I think it probably is exactly that. But the benefit that Apple has is that, I mean, it makes no difference to them, really. You know, they are, as you say, a device manufacturer. So if they add something to Apple Music and don't charge a premium price for it, it just makes them look better and they're still going to make their money elsewhere. Whereas other services don't have that advantage, especially if they are only in the business of selling music streaming services, which obviously Amazon isn't. Amazon Music is not a core revenue generating product for Amazon. So it also can just sort of add cool features all over the place that other services would normally charge for and do charge for, and I guess just kind of mess things up for everyone else.
Because of course this announcement from Apple and Amazon comes as we await Spotify launching their higher quality audio option, and the assumption was that they were going to be charging the premium like their other competitors. So maybe really this is Apple and Amazon trying to screw over Spotify, because of course, although the music industry would benefit from there being that premium price because it's rev share, so do the services themselves. So maybe it's more about screwing over Spotify than it is the music industry. Although if you want to put a different spin on it, two other things it's probably worth saying. First of all, I do sometimes think that within the music industry, people often overestimate how many people out there would actually pay a premium for higher quality audio. I suspect that about two-thirds of the people who would think that paying a £5 or £10 premium a month for higher quality audio was a good deal probably work in the music industry. So that's basically the people who are getting the money out, putting the money in. Because I think, yes, people say, ah, yes, but when you hear it, higher quality audio, particularly with that sort of sneaky Dolby stuff that's going on, it sounds so much better, providing you've got the headphones or the speakers capable of properly delivering it. And that may be true, but actually, even back in the CD era, when we were trying to sell higher quality audio on discs and surround sound discs and all of that, it was an incredibly niche market. So there is possibly an argument that the number of people who would pay a premium is relatively low. So we were never going to make that much more money by charging this premium for higher quality audio. And there is another point. I remember a few years ago, I suspect when maybe Tidal was first dabbling in this, or maybe Deezer was, I can't remember, being at a music tech conference where Imogen Heap was on the panel, and we were talking about, you know, charging extra for higher quality audio. And her position was, I mean, obviously, everyone in the music community would like more money coming in to share out across all the stakeholders. Although I do distinctly remember her saying, well, if we're able to give people music at a better quality audio, as an artist, I would like my fans to listen to my music in the best possible way. And I'm less concerned about getting a premium for that. I just want to be able to enjoy my music as close to the studio experience as possible. So it might be that it's not as big a loss to the music industry as some people are suggesting. And I have to say, in terms of getting more money out of music fans beyond the £10 a month or whatever it is they're paying each month to a premium subscription service, I'm much more interested actually in the various direct-to-fan monetization tools that are popping up all over the place on the streaming services, on the social apps, and of course, you know, with the Patreons of this world. Because I actually think that is the way to get more money out of the fans. Have them continuing to pay £10 a month for Spotify. I mean, yeah, the £10 a month needs to keep up with inflation. And that's been a long time coming. But I think that's going to start happening now. The Spotify's of this world, they're going to start putting the prices up across the board to keep in line with inflation. But in terms of growing the pie beyond inflation, I do think it's artists offering added benefits, experiences, content directly to the fan base. Now, whether that is through a Patreon, or it's by using the various monetization tools, the donation tools and subscription tools that are now available on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and Twitch, etc. Or indeed, whether it's Spotify et al. Offering more of those tools. And they have dabbled in that space before, but never very well, in my opinion. But I think that kind of direct-to-fan premium charge is really starting to grow on the quiet. And that is where we're going to grow the digital pie. And actually, a whole lot of that revenue at the moment isn't even recorded in the record industry's stats, because it's often coming directly to the artist, not through a label. That throws up a load of questions about what rights are being exploited in all of this and how the hell are we going to license it. But I think that's where there is room for significant new income coming in from the fans, rather than charging a premium for higher quality audio to the 609 people in the world who are actually interested in it, would be my position.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think if you're going to make more money out of streaming and add things to streaming that make more money, it's got to be things that are going to be of interest to the mainstream consumer of music. And high quality audio is not that thing. I mean, most people would never go into the sound quality. I mean, most people would never go into the settings of their streaming service, let alone the sound quality settings, and up them to the highest quality. And most people don't have the equipment to listen to things in the highest quality anyway. So any service trying to charge a premium for high quality audio is doing so by charging a premium to people who are willing to pay a premium for more expensive equipment in the first place. So it's sort of, I mean, it's a bit like, we saw you coming. We know you'll hand over more money, so please do so now. But yeah, for the average person, they were never going to spend. I mean, for a lot of people, I think it's still quite a leap to say, give us £10 a month for a streaming service, and give us £20 a month for a streaming service is so far out there that it was only ever going to be a very, very niche product. And yeah, maybe just saying that it's available makes streaming seem more attractive when most people won't use it or even have the ability to use it.
Meanwhile, from an artist's perspective, offering the core fan base, not everyone's going to be interested in this, but the core fan base, extra content and experiences is probably the way to bring in more money. And so that's all about navigating all the various director fan tools that are now out there, by which I mean not so much the director fan stores where you're selling merchandise and stuff like that. I mean the donation and the subscription tools that are really starting to gain momentum now across a plethora of platforms. It's working out how do you use them. What is the label's role? What is the publisher's role? And getting that sorted, because I do think that's where we're going to see significant growth in the next few years. Meanwhile, if you like higher quality audio, the good news is it's now being rolled out across all the other streaming services. Plus, it's looking likely you might not even have to pay extra to access it.
And finally this week, Sony Music's acquisition of Cobalt's AWOL division and its neighbouring rights agency, which it announced in February, has been completed. However, it still has one final hurdle to get over because last week, the UK's Competition and Markets Authority announced that it was going to investigate that acquisition.
Yeah, so as you say, in February, Sony, which on the quiet, or sometimes not really on the quiet, has been buying up music distribution and label services companies at a pretty regular pace in recent years, usually via its The Orchard business, which is the Sony distribution and label services company. It announced that it was buying AWOL, which was Cobalt's label services business. Obviously, Cobalt had been offering services to artists who want to distribute and market their recordings for quite some time. Originally at Cobalt, it was that AWOL was the sort of the DIY distributor for self-releasing artists, because actually AWOL had been doing that for a very long time. Cobalt bought AWOL, which was a DIY distributor. But then a few years ago, Cobalt rebranded its entire label services and distribution business under the AWOL brand. And that is what Sony has bought, as well as a neighbouring rights agency, which is administrating the performing right income for sound recordings. So that was Sony quite significantly growing its distribution and label services division. And interesting, given that it is already very established in that domain through The Orchard, but there was a kind of logic to the acquisition, because although both AWOL and The Orchard have both label clients and artist clients, so that means that they provide distribution and other services to independent labels, and they also provide those services to self-releasing artists, The Orchard's client base tends to be more labels than artists, and AWOL's client base tends to be more artists than labels. So it does sort of make sense that now Sony Music has a significantly expanded services side to its business, The Orchard with a focus on labels, AWOL with a focus on artists. And of course, the more music you're distributing as a company, the more data you get to crunch. And that data is becoming ever more valuable when it comes to things like album marketing. So various reasons why Sony would want to do this deal. As you say, the deal has now been finalized, but even when the deal was announced back in February, some people, particularly in the independent music community, expressed concern about Sony getting even more dominant on the distribution and services side of the record industry, and in doing so, just becoming an ever more dominant player in the record industry at large.
Yeah, the Pan-European Trade Group for the Indie Sector, Impala, had already expressed concern about how, through its Orchard division, Sony was boosting its market share. I mean, particularly it brought that up when it was opposing Sony's complete buyout of the old EMI songs catalogue via its music publishing division back in 2018. Although whether those competition law concerns justify any actual regulator intervention on the Sony AWOL deal remains to be seen, because so far the CMA has only said that it will investigate the deal and hasn't actually provided any other comment on that investigation. I mean, even the timeline for the investigation is yet to be confirmed.
Yes, we had a very short statement from the UK's competition regulator last week, which said the CMA is investigating the completed acquisition by Sony Music Entertainment of the AWOL and Cobalt neighbouring rights businesses from Cobalt Music Group Limited. On the 17th of May 2021, The CMA has served an initial enforcement order under Section 72, Part 2 of the Enterprise Act 2002, a lot of twos going on there, in relation to the completed acquisition. But yeah, that's all it said so far. Sony did then subsequently put out a statement confirming that the deal had now been completed and acknowledging that that investigation had now begun, saying we will work closely with the CMA towards a successful outcome later this year.
But yeah, having already discussed those concerns raised by the indie sector, there was some welcoming to be done of this investigation. So Impala's executive chair, Helen Smith, said, "We welcome the investigation into this acquisition as it leads to further concentration in the music market and is part of an ongoing wider move by Sony to acquire significant independent players in key markets. We expect the investigation to cover both the physical and also the digital markets and the impact on competitors, digital services, artists and fans who will all lose out." Meanwhile, CEO of the Association of Independent Music in the UK, Paul Pacifico, said, "Over the last several years, we have seen an incremental shift towards a music market in which a few dominant players have disproportionate influence. Each increment counts, and it is crucial to the future health of the market to ensure that all players can take part on a meritocratic basis."
So it'll be interesting to see how this CMA investigation proceeds. The indie sector in the UK and across Europe and indeed across the world will definitely be following it very closely. Of course, as part of the whole economics of streaming debate that's been ongoing in the UK in recent months, there have been talk about getting the CMA to investigate the dominant position of the majors, Sony and Universal in particular, as big rights owners in both recordings and songs. Now, obviously, that's not what this investigation is about, but I suspect that the indie sector and indeed songwriters and artist groups will be looking at what is said, assuming anything of interest is said, and whether or not that provides further evidence as to why a wider investigation should be done regarding the dominance of the majors in the music rights industry. So, interesting development.
But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you like the show, why not tell some people about it? Go on, tell two people now, right now. We've finished. You can subscribe as well if you haven't done that before, and you can rate and review us. If you want to email us about anything, our email address is setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Moulton, Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.